ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
Lawmaking and regulating hate speech is difficult because you have to balance freedom of speech, but then you need to draw the line at genuinely harmful speech, which is something I've been arguing for decades.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
It's night time, not long after Luke and Sean have gone to prison. Elisa's parents, Bevan and Catherine, are home in bed. It's warm outside, so they've got their front windows open. They can hear a car coming, and it slows down as it gets nearer to the house. This man starts yelling out from the car.
Calling my daughter a slut and all this stuff, and carrying on like an idiot. Just being a dickhead.
Bevan gets up out of bed, and he waits to see if he can catch a glimpse of the culprit.
Then about 20 minutes, he come past again, had another go. And I knew who it was just obvious, because we're sitting out there watching him do it.
He's convinced it's Darren Bloomfield, Sean's dad. He goes to confront him, but Darren denies he has anything to do with it. And he told us later he didn't go anywhere near the place. Catherine calls the local police to report the drive-by. Detective Alison Manicky Brown is also keeping tabs on the situation from her office in Warrnambool. She stays in close contact with the local officer in Balmoral.
So I would let him know when court processes were occurring so he could keep an eye on things and be over the top of things. Because it is a small community, it has such a massive effect.
In the wake of the trial, Balmoral feels like a powder keg.
And the community is in shock. But they're also angry because these guys, they've never been in trouble before. They've never been convicted of a crime and their families have establishment names in Balmoral. Lisa Hutchins, who's the bush nurse, she's just unable to sit with the outcome. She'd been a first responder of sorts to Elise in the caravan and a key prosecution witness in the trial. But Lisa has more to say about what she remembers from that morning in the kitchen. And almost as soon as Luke and Sean are sentenced to jail, she gets to work writing a new statement. We've had an actor read it out.
I offer this information for consideration in case its omission may have resulted in an unjust outcome. I questioned in my head if Elise was seeking to present information to save face and take control of an embarrassing situation.
The key piece of information in Lisa's statement is this new recollection from after she picked Elise up from the caravan.
I questioned Elise about what had occurred. I asked her, "Did you consent to this?" She folded her arms across herself, put her head down, and in a low voice said, "Luke, maybe, but not Sean."
Luke, maybe, but not Sean. Luke, maybe. These two words that Lisa's now claiming Elise said in her kitchen, they're two words that throw into doubt that Luke raped her. And when the men appeal, these two words become crucial. In September of 2020, three Supreme Court judges agree that Lisa's statement amounts to fresh evidence. The appeal is a success, and the men walk free after serving around half their minimum sentence. Both will now face a retrial.
Elise is dumbstruck.
All I could feel was just like, I don't know if I can do this again. Like, I don't know if I can go through this again. Once I calmed down, you know, a little bit, and Mum kind of explained what the statement said, then I got angry. Then I got really, really, really fucking angry. Because that conversation didn't happen.
I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns.
And this is episode 5 of Hometown Boys, a series from Background Briefing. By the time Lisa comes forward with her new statement, Elise is living in another state. The year after the 21st birthday party, she'd shifted her entire life somewhere else.
I pretty much just packed my car with as much stuff as I could, just my clothes, a handful of my plants, like my favourite succulents that I had, and I transferred my studies online, and then I just moved. I didn't really have too much of a plan, but I just knew I had to get out.
And she's been trying to build a new life in this place. She's slowly starting to make new friends. She's doing a little bit of work here and there, but she's still in the long process of recovery after this traumatic event.
If I was able to do my groceries on my own without, you know, panicking and having a meltdown, like that was a big deal for me. So like that's kind of where I was at.
So when she's told that the case is starting all over again, it does hit her like a ton of bricks.
I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think. I couldn't see.
And for a moment, she's not sure she can do it.
My question was, what happens if I don't? Like, if I can't do this, do they just get off scot-free? They were like, yeah, if you can't do this, they just get off. And I couldn't do that. Absolutely not.
Elise's parents, Bevan and Catherine, still live on the big, beautiful farm that we talked about earlier, and they don't want to leave it lightly. So they've been sticking it out in Balmoral.
We like to go to the football in Melbourne. So we'd go down, have a weekend in Melbourne, go to the footy just to get away and do something different.
They'd already been rattled by the nighttime drive-by.
And you'd be feeling fine. But then as you got closer and closer and closer back to home, and before you got to town, you'd just start feeling sick again and think, ugh, I just don't want to be here.
Now they need to gear up for a retrial.
I'd had enough. And the kids weren't wanting to visit. I mean, we want to see our kids and they don't want to come there. So of course you've got to go.
So in late 2021, which is about 5 years on from the birthday party, they finally put their farm on the market.
When Luke and Sean are released from prison, they appear to be welcomed back into the community. It's cricket season and Luke starts playing for the local Pigeon Ponds Cricket Club. It's this beautiful little green manicured oval off a bush road, and a lot of the people who are at Pigeon Ponds, they're also members of the footy club. And so, you know, in winter you play footy and in summer you play cricket. They've got their Facebook page and all the results are posted on there. They've got, you know, all the stats, who did what, batsman, da-da-da. And they're talking about the A-grade team and what a great win they've had that week. And they talk about how Luke did the job with the bat, close to a good 200-run win. And he's ensconced back in the cricket club. And at the same time, there's discussions happening at the football club in the pre-season ahead of when things all kick off at footy, about letting him play. And some of those key players who made decisions in the very beginning are pushing for that. But they've got a new president, and this president makes a call. And he says, no, I don't think so, not while this is going on. And so while he's allowed to play cricket, Luke doesn't actually end up coming back to play at the footy club.
And tell us about Sean, because Sean's a bit harder to pin down, right?
Yeah, so he is a bit more of a ghost. Like for a guy his age, he's not really online chronically, you know, like he's not going to pop up on TikTok, for example. But sort of what we can gather is that he just sort of assimilates back into the community. It takes a long time for the retrial to roll around. And by August of 22, it's 6 years after the birthday party. Sean and Luke have got a completely new defence team. Sean has employed an experienced barrister. Like, this guy is smooth.
He's got this really posh English accent, and he's known as a bit of a courtroom killer. He's the one you want on your team. He's incisive, and he's certainly mounting a very good defence. And then on the other side, you have this prosecutor who means business. She's a steely veteran of the court, and she's been out there hustling as a barrister for a long time, 30 years in the law. She's a take-no-prisoners kind of woman. So they've got new legal teams on both sides, and the defence has a new strategy too. This time, Luke and Sean decide not to take the stand, and they let their barristers do the talking. The other key difference is that the defence has a new witness. It's Lisa Hutchins, the bush nurse, who in the first trial was a key prosecution witness. But because she's now claiming Elise told her she had maybe consented to Luke, she's become a key defence witness. The case itself is essentially run on the same lines. It's about consent and whether or not Elise agreed to the sex. But this time, it's also about who you believe, about what was said. Did Elise say Luke maybe, but not Sean? Or is Lisa making it up? So when Lisa turns up to court, it's going to be a big day. And Charlotte, you were there.
Yeah, I was super curious to see the kind of evidence that she would deliver and just who this woman was, this woman who was really instrumental in bringing about this appeal, getting the retrial up. She's at the centre of all of this, and so I absolutely wanted to be there to see how it would all play out. So, you know, got the train down, went down to William Street in Melbourne CBD to the county court. Up the elevator, sat at the back of the courtroom and watched her as she made her way up to the stand with her little cow print handbag. And she seemed really comfortable in her own skin, really, like she wasn't apologising for being there and she had something to say. The first thing that she's asked is about her relationship with Elise and how they interacted with each other in this community.
We all take part in raising each other's kids in terms of being confidants and support people. And I felt we had a very close relationship.
We asked an actor to read from the court transcripts. So the voice isn't Lisa's, but the words are hers.
Elise would often come to me and talk to me about things that she perhaps didn't feel comfortable chatting with her mum about.
She tells the court she'd known Luke and Sean even longer than Elise, since they were born. And then she's taken to the night of the 21st birthday party and she's asked to recount what she can remember. And is there anything that stands out from that night for her?
I was just a bit concerned with them. I'm trying to say this in a respectful way. You know, she was being quite amorous, open, flirtatious, I would say, with a number of the males there. And as a parent...
The prosecutor interjects immediately.
A matter in the absence of the jury, please, Your Honour.
And asks the judge if the jury can leave the room. She describes this material as scandalous.
This evidence is completely irrelevant to the issues in this case. It seems to be directed towards suggesting the complainant was behaving in a certain way generally towards people at the party earlier in the evening, and that that could somehow impact upon whether she consented to the acts, the subject of these charges.
So there's a discussion between the judge and the lawyers about whether the judge actually needs to discharge the jury and start all over again. The prosecutor is worried that now that they've heard these words, just these couple of words about her being flirtatious at the party, that they're going to have this clouded image in their mind of Elise and that that's going to taint their view of the whole case.
I'm also, for the record, extremely concerned about how this witness is going to conduct herself in her evidence if she can't even, in evidence in chief, control herself without blurting out things like that. She's quite an unguided missile, and I'm quite concerned about what else might come out if we continue with her.
In the end, the prosecutor's content with the judge telling the jury to ignore Lisa's comment. So when the jury comes back in, The judge instructs them to disregard Lisa's claim that Elise was being flirtatious. And he tells the jury young people can behave in a certain way. It doesn't mean that they consent to something. While she's on the stand, Lisa's also asked about the moment she picked up Elise in the early morning. Does she remember Elise telling her she'd been raped?
Look, it jogs memories, but for me, in terms of recalling, you know, the exact specifics of the conversation that occurred, that's challenging.
But there is an exchange she says she definitely remembers.
So the conversation was definitely around consent. Did you consent to this? Once we had established that it was Luke and Sean.
So when you said, did you consent to this, what did she say?
She said at the time, she said, oh, Luke maybe, but not Sean. And her body language was, she crossed her arms and sort of was quite sullen in the way that she said it.
This is significant because Lisa's made it very clear that she can't remember the specifics of the conversation. But she does remember that these words, Luke maybe, but not Sean, were spoken. At this stage in the trial, she's giving evidence to the friendly defence lawyer, who's basically there to coax these things out of her that are good for his case. So he sort of gently says to her, why is it that you never provided this information before?
Because it was my understanding that the case was over. I had an assumption that there would be an appeal, and I felt that I had not contributed the information that I knew from the case or from my involvement in this case, and that I felt that it needed to be considered.
So next up, it's time for the cross-examination. This is when we really start to see this story tested. The barrister is not someone to mess with. You know, she's a clinical practitioner of the law and she's very comfortable in the courtroom. Like, you can just imagine, like, Janet King, you know, like, that's the vibes. She certainly works to dismantle Lisa's credibility. You know, she reminds Lisa of these multiple opportunities that she's had to bring this fresh evidence. When she was giving her police statement to Alison, the detective, she could have called her at any time. She had an opportunity at the committal hearing and at the first trial in 2019 when she was actually asked in the court. So why is it that she waited until the day after they were jailed before she came forward with the evidence? Lisa does accept in this exchange that she had been given opportunities to go into the evidence and hadn't. But she says in the court that she felt badgered and overwhelmed and that she wasn't asked the right questions. The prosecutor takes Lisa back to her original statement.
I'm going to read some parts of it to you, probably all of it. So, the statement reads, my name is Lisa Hutchins.
The prosecutor wants to remind Lisa that in her statement, she said that Elise had told her that she'd been raped and that she was crying and that it was Luke and Sean who had done this to her.
She just said, I didn't want it to happen.
And it's starting to get quite heated.
Do you agree with me that this was a very serious matter?
Absolutely.
You were an important witness?
Absolutely.
The issue of consent was front and centre from the beginning in your mind?
Yes, I totally agree.
And you were going to be signing a statement and adopting it as true and correct?
Yes.
Subject to the penalties of perjury, correct?
Correct.
Lisa and the prosecutor are clearly butting heads. And you know, Lisa, she's the mayoress of Balmoral. She's run the Bush Nursing Centre for 3 decades. And she's used to being in charge. And now she's sitting in this courtroom and it's the prosecutor who's in control. And she keeps pulling her up. That's enough. Don't elaborate. No thanks. Don't want to hear any more about that. And it's clear that this isn't easy for Lisa. And when the prosecutor is ready to strike, she comes down hard.
You were disappointed with the verdict, weren't you?
No.
You were hoping for an acquittal.
No.
After the sentence, you decided you would fabricate this statement, correct?
No, that is incorrect and a blatant lie.
The prosecutor tells the jury basically to reject Lisa's testimony. So when she makes her closing arguments, she urges the jury to consider Lisa's credibility versus Elise. As far as she's concerned, Lisa is not a witness of truth.
The defence, on the other hand, tells the jury that Lisa's got no reason to lie. and that her evidence supports their argument that Elise was doing something to save face, that she'd done something at the party that she later regretted. And this smooth London barrister with the posh accent, he tells the jury that sometimes people cry rape when it's not true.
The jury retires to deliberate. Finally, the verdict is in. And it's guilty again, on all counts. With the verdict returned, there's one thing left for the court to do. Luke and Sean never finished their original jail terms, but that was years ago, and now the judge needs to decide how much more time they should spend inside, or if they should go to jail at all. Four months after the verdict, Elise travels to Melbourne to present her victim impact statement. Once again, just as in the first trial, the support pours in for the convicted men. Almost every chair in this room is full. But this time, Elise is among the crowd. It's the first time that she's come face to face with people from this town for years. Some of them she hasn't seen since the 21st birthday party, which was 6.5 years earlier. She carefully, slowly stands up to read her victim impact statement. Elise tells the court she was raped by people she trusted, then discarded by her community. That she's been diagnosed with a severe depressive disorder that makes living a functional life very difficult. Depression is a daily battle with yourself, she tells the court. The burning desire to live is still there, but the illness tells you there's nothing to live for. Alison, the detective, is in the court watching.
For her to get up and give that victim impact statement is probably one of the strongest things I've seen in my career. It gives meaning to the investigation. It gives meaning to that sitting down on that very first day and taking that statement from her. It gives meaning to, okay, you've done the right thing. We've done our job for her. And that's all we do it for. We do it for her.
When the victim of a crime stands up in a courtroom and delivers their victim impact statement, it's generally a very potent moment for the courtroom. I've sat through a bunch of them. It's the moment where the victim, they get to say, you know, this is what this did to me. And everyone else in the courtroom has to shut up and listen, basically, and you can hear a pin drop. But in this case, when Elise delivers her statement, the courtroom around her, it's not silent.
Yeah, there was this kind of scoffing stuff going on in the background as well, which was definitely audible to us. And Detective Alison Manicky-Brown, she hears the chatter as well.
There was just comments, just, and I'm not going to repeat them, but there was just comments made.
She's waiting for the judge to intervene.
It's just a lack of respect. A lack of respect for another human, I think. That, to me, yeah.
After Elise wraps up her statement, it's time for the other side. And there's dozens of these glowing character references that are drafted for the court.
The name is as local as you can get.
Many of these are from Balmoral townsfolk. Others are from new sporting clubs.
Despite the tough times he's had to endure over the past few years,
has a genuine want to see his peers and friends succeed.
They basically use them to help the judge decide what's a fair sentence for the men.
An incident that is entirely out of character for the boy.
And all in all, Luke gets 23.
Luke is a good, genuine person.
Many also refuse to accept the guilty verdict, and they have this way of continuing to refer to the rape conviction as an allegation or a crime that he's been accused of.
The allegations made against Luke are serious, but it doesn't...
I strongly believe the accused actions are out of character.
He is so resilient and strong, which I admire a lot.
And on Sean's side, there's 14 references, and some of those are from his immediate family. His dad gives one, and he writes about his son's love of fishing and camping and how he would follow him everywhere as a little boy. Sean's girlfriend and her family lend their support too.
Sean was very honest with me from the beginning and told me of the charges he was facing.
It has deeply affected Sean, causing him great shame and embarrassment.
Charges against Sean are so extreme and out of character, I cannot believe that Sean is capable of them.
We tried to contact every one of these character references in the hopes that they might speak about their friends on this podcast, but none of them agreed to an interview.
When the date rolls around for sentencing, the court, again, fills with supporters. And there's only one figure in the front row, Alison, the detective, who's there for Elise.
Rape is an extremely serious offence. So I personally was of the opinion that the consequence should have been the original sentence, really, at the end of the day.
The original sentence would mean Luke and Sean going back to prison. For Sean, who's facing a sexual assault charge and a second rape charge, that would mean another 4 years, with a minimum of 21 months. And for Luke, it would mean another 3 years, with a minimum of 15 months. In his sentencing remarks, the judge makes a note of Elise's bravery.
She wrote of continual feelings of hurt, anger, sadness and confusion towards the event and the after effects.
But the judge also appears to be moved by the man's character references and the fact that this court case has dragged on for 7 years.
The requirements of justice and the requirements of mercy are often in conflict, but we live in a society which values both justice and mercy.
And although the men have been convicted of rape now for the second time, they won't be returning to jail.
It is my view that this is one of the rare cases where ordinary members of the community would not necessarily expect a further term of imprisonment to be imposed in either case.
Instead, they'll each be given a community corrections order. The men's supporters cry out in joy. Alison, the detective, gently closes her eyes in the front row. It's been 7 years since Elise gave her police statement in the hours after the 21st birthday party. 7 years since she stood in a hospital room so a detective could take a full-length portrait of the clothes she was wearing when two of her friends raped her. 4 years have passed since a jury told her for the first time that she was believed. And since Lisa, the bush nurse and second mum who rescued her from the caravan, came forward with the statement that would turn that verdict on its head. A statement that would lead to 4 more years of court. Through it all, Elise waits and waits. She's 27 years old by now and working at a gin distillery. She's standing there labelling bottles when her phone pings with the sentence.
And I picked it up and I looked at it and I was like, yep, about fucking right. Put it back down and just moved on. I was so ready to be disappointed that it literally didn't affect me in that moment. I've given my evidence like umpteen times. I've given all my statements. I've had 2 victim impact statements, 2 trials. I've given everything that I can and I got community service.
As the dust settles on the case, the community at large tries to forget, but a silent few still believe this town needs a reckoning. Elise is not the only woman with a story to tell. Next time on Hometown Boys.
When I said, get off me, no, he called me a frigid bitch.
Once it was decided that I was that kind of person, I guess it was just expected that that's what I would be, and I was nothing.
I'm still part of this club, and so many people that did support the rapists are still part of the club.
If you've experienced sexual assault and you need support, you can call Full Stop Australia on 1800 385 578. That's 1800 385 578. Background Briefing's sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Simon Branthwaite. Music composition by Emrys Cronin and Joshua Curtis. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Our rollout producer is Ben Speen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanu Falali. I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.